tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
You can hear me.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata at Black Hollywood Live. I am your host, Carla Renata. I am a film critic. I do some pundit work over at Fox 11 LA, and I'm also a freelance contributor to Variety, in addition to having my own site, thecurvyfilmcritic.com. Welcome, 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 welcome. If this is your first time here, please click the subscribe button below and give me a big old thumbs up to let me know you were here. And we're going to go ahead and get started. But before we do, let me just say, I hope that everyone is still staying safe, staying sane. You are continuing to wash your hands. We are still in the middle of a pandemic, people. We are still in the middle of a pandemic. So please, please, please wear those masks, wash your hands, put some gloves on if you have to, and keep it moving, not only for your sake, but for the people around you, because the droplets from speaking can, you know, wear people out. So there's that. But I'm going to get off my quarantine soapbox and get on with the show. So I saw some really awesome, awesome, awesome documentaries that I'm going to talk about. One is called Rebuilding Paradise. The other one is called Good Trouble. And I also have some exclusive interviews with Hamilton's Leslie Odom Jr., a.k.a. Aaron Burr, and Christopher Jackson, who played George Washington in the multi-Tony Award-winning hit Hamilton, which is going to hit the airwaves on Disney Plus on July 3rd. So having said that, let me get on with it. Now, California, I live here in Southern California, and the AfterBuzz and Black Hollywood Live studios are located in Southern California. Having said that, we get a lot of wildfires here, brush fires. Sometimes they're started by the heat. Sometimes they're started by winds kicking up. It's always a different situation. And I remember one time in particular, there was some fires, I think, in Santa Clarita, that the fire was so vast and so broad that the ashes from the fire actually hit where I live, all over my patio. It took me a really long time to get it out. And when I had to clean off the patios, I wore one of those, I think they're called N92 mask or N95 mask, the ones that try to prevent you from inhaling a lot of dust and particles. You know, it's the same kind of mask that construction workers use sometimes. But I promise you, when I finished cleaning that patio, I still had particles that had somehow found their way into my lungs, and I was coughing up and blowing my nose with residual dust and soot in it for a couple of days. But having said that, I'm sure what I went through with that ash and brush on my patio paled, I'm absolutely positive, it paled in comparison to what the residents of Paradise, California went through. Paradise, California is an old gold prospecting mining town here in the state of California. It is 100 years old, and prospectors used to go there to look for gold. It was very, very popular back in the day and has been there for, you know, eons. But there was one night about 1:38 a.m. in the morning that an electrical fire caused them to, caused the town to go up in flames. And so Rebuilding Paradise, which is a film written, directed, and produced, a documentary film by Ron Howard. We featured his daughter's documentary, Dad's Here, a couple of weeks ago. That documentary is going to be seen on Nat Geo on June 30th. And I was privy to be able to have a look at it ahead of time. When I tell y'all, this is the most heartbreaking film I've ever seen. It chronicles the moments of the fire, during the fire, right before it hit, up to a year after the fact. And it was devastating. It destroyed up to 18,000 acres of land, and 85 people died in the process of it. There were the first 10 minutes of that film from a bird. There's all different vantage points. Like, we get it from the dash cams of the police officers. We get it from people that are trying to get out of Paradise, and they're literally driving with flames to the left, to the right. They can't see in front of them. The flames are underneath the car. Like, the likelihood of the engines catching on fire, or the cars blowing up, or the tires blowing while they're trying to run through the fire in the car, and them blowing up and them not being, you know, being stuck there, that grave likelihood was so great. And several people, like I said, 85 lost their lives. But that footage, that first 10 minutes of footage that you see in this film, it literally encapsulates any ideologies or any kind of visions that you have imagined hell to look like. That's what hell looked like to the residents of Paradise, California. And it turns out, like I said, the fire was due to the negligence of some electrical situations with PG&E. Now, if PG&E sounds familiar to you, it's because PG&E is also the company that Aaron Brockovich was dealing with in the film by the same name, that eventually grabbed Julia Roberts an Oscar. But Aaron Brockovich, honey, came to the rescue again, and she ended up helping the residents of Paradise, California sue PG&E, and they were awarded $14.5 billion. $14.5 billion can't bring back your loved ones. It can't bring back your memories. It can't bring back your homes. It can help you rebuild, which is exactly what the town of Paradise, California is doing. And the ending footage, which is just as prolific and profound as the beginning footage, shows the disasters that have hit around the world in Beauregard, Alabama, Greece, Nepal, Sydney, and Japan. So again, y'all, that's Rebuilding Paradise, directed, produced, and written by Ron Howard on Nat Geo on June 30th. Now, we've been talking a lot about Black Lives Matter and what that means for people in the African-American community, right? And what it means for people that are just humans. But before I get to that, let me give a shout out to Brandon and Michael B. What's up, y'all? Good to see you here as always. All right, so Good Trouble chronicles the life, the legacy, and the career of Representative John Lewis. If y'all are not familiar with John Lewis, you need to get familiar with him. He is a living legend. He's one of the few people that are left living from the whole civil rights movement. He is a congressperson that has been for decades fighting for voting rights, healthcare, gun, and immigration reform. For decades, he has been fighting for our rights on Capitol Hill. And he worked right alongside Dr. Martin Luther King and marched in Selma as a young member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or the SCLC, which is an abbreviation. This documentary is necessary to watch for a variety of reasons, historical reasons. People are looking, you know, some of my white peers and constituents are looking to things to educate themselves on the Black experience, or Black people, or how Black people are feeling in this nightmarish moment that we are experiencing in America. Good Trouble is one of those things that you need to watch. It will be on video demand everywhere. But just so that you know, Good Trouble is not the first documentary to chronicle the life of Representative Lewis. In 2017, PBS did one, but this one that's directed by Dawn Porter, it shows some inclusion of footage, and it shows Representative Lewis as not only a soldier in the fight for civil rights, voting rights, and human rights in particular, but it shows him as a human being with a life and a legacy, and you know, that he's just a human. Everybody that's on the front lines fighting for whatever cause they believe in, at the end of the day, they all are human beings. They bleed, they hurt, they love, they have a life. And so we all need to remember that as well. But Representative Lewis is the last of a legacy. He is a living legend within the African-American community and within the human race. So I also want to acknowledge the fact that Representative Lewis was diagnosed with cancer in December. This is now June, going on July in a couple of days. We hope that his prognosis is good. We hope that he's doing well. And we wish him nothing but speedy recovery here from Black Hollywood Live and from The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. But again, please check out Good Trouble, which drops on video demand and some select theaters, I believe, in Georgia on July 3rd. Please, please, please make it your business to check that out. Now, let me talk a little bit about Christopher Jackson. You might be able to see behind me, but behind me is a poster of The Lion King. And I talked about The Lion King on this show 5,000 times. I know y'all are sick of me talking about the daggone Lion King, but I was in the Los Angeles company of The Lion King that played here in LA for 3 years, the very first company, the original Los Angeles company. I was Shenzi and was nominated for an NAACP for that performance. Having said that, around that same time on the East Coast, Christopher Jackson was playing Simba in The Lion King. And we've known each other way before that. We've known each other for a really, really long time. So no one was prouder and no one was more excited than me to see him get nominated for a Tony for his role as George Washington in the multi-award winning musical Hamilton, which I said at the top of the show is coming to Disney Plus on July 3rd. So I had a chance to catch up with him and Leslie, but right now I'm gonna let you take a look and a listen to my interview with Christopher Jackson from the award-winning musical Hamilton.
So listen, let's talk about a little Hamilton, brother. Shall we? Yes, we shall. You are so stupid. In the process of doing 8 shows a week, there's bound to be some lyrics that are lost, some steps that are missed.
I hate you for this already. Okay. Come on. I see what it's, I see. You're setting the tone now. Okay. All right. Let's go.
You know, a set piece that didn't quite happen the way it was supposed to happen, you know?
There's a moment in Right Hand Man where George looks up and sees an incoming cannonball, and I'm supposed to yell incoming and then run upstage into a frozen tableau while Lynn comes on stage. I don't know what was going through my mind. I'm sure that I was just exhausted and, you know, words. And nothing came out. All I could think about was yelling timber.
Oh, no.
Which is not the lyric. It is not the word to say at that moment. And I said, and then I just stopped talking. And, you know, I told the story the other day. I look over in the wings, and who else but Daniel Watts is standing right there in the wing, staring at me, trying to control the laughter that is about to burst forth from his mouth, you know, from his face. You know, with a show like this, because the whole thing is set to rhythm, if any one person on stage flubbed a single line, and oftentimes it was Lynn, everybody else would walk around with eggshells the rest of the show. Because you upset that internal bounce that's going, and now you're thinking, oh God, please don't let it be me. Please don't let me be the one that, like, you know, loses focus and then can't say the words. It's an awful feeling, but man, I'm sure there were many more moments, but that's the first one that comes to mind, just because when the mind gets tired, whoo! Strange things happen.
Yeah, it does. For sure, for sure. Most people don't even get a chance to go inside the White House, let alone perform in the White House for the first Black president. What was going through your mind as it was getting closer and closer to that day? Because that had to be like, is this really happening right now?
It absolutely was surreal. And on the drive down, I kept thinking about my grandmother. While my mother was busy finishing her degree with 2 children, my grandmother spent a great deal of time raising my sister and I. And my grandmother lived an incredibly full life. She was a secretary for the NAACP. She was an organizer for Black folks. She was a business owner. She was the person that the entire Black community came to when there was a problem or when someone needed help or when someone needed to get recommendation or reference, etc.
She was that doll.
She was. And I knew more about Black history by the time I was 5 than most folks know by the time they get out of high school. And this was back in the, you know, late 70s and early 80s when that wasn't even being taught in schools, right? So I say all of that to set this up. I'm standing here singing this song about the first president and the experience of establishing something that would be a foundational part for our democracy, for the first Black president who was about to leave office. And I look over my shoulder and there's a Stuart portrait that's 12 feet tall of George Washington. And I thought to myself, I sing this song, and I thought to myself, man, Nana gave me permission to dream, and I know she prayed over me every day, and she dreamed for me, but she never could have imagined this moment. She never could have dreamt this moment.
No, I don't think anybody could have dreamt that moment.
No. And, you know, the president came, thanked me, and dapped me up, and gave me a hug, and then I was flooded with, you know, that was the last moment of that concert that we did, and all of these things just came rushing to me so strongly. I had the strongest memories of my earliest times singing for my Nana, and what that represented, and to this day, it remains one of the strongest memories that I have of the entire Hamilton experience, of my whole life. It was just incredible. You know, my great-grandkids will see that, and that means something to me. That is a moment that, you know, most of the productions that are not filmed, fortunately this one is, and so there's even a context for being able to see what I did on stage, but more importantly, just being able to have those experiences and pass those on will hopefully inspire the next little brown boy coming from the middle of nowhere who has been taught and given permission to dream but hasn't had that dream yet.
That's beautiful. We're in the middle of a pandemic, yeah? Do you think that Hamilton being on Apple TV is going to set a precedence post-COVID-19 for future Broadway productions, and is this going to challenge the live theater experience?
We go to theater because we need to. We go to theater because we go to church. We go to games because we need to be around each other. We go to concerts because we need to have a collective experience. There are countless number and reasons for wanting to just put a show up, film it, and then, you know, and they call that a movie, right? But yeah. If it were so easy to do and if there wasn't a reason for holding the theater aloft and making sure that it was available to people, theater producers would have found a way around it because they can only make a certain amount of money. You can only fill the number of seats that you got. I think the real reason why we go to this theater and that we crave these experiences and as actors why we want to be a part of those things is because the social contract that is at work when we all sit down together and we take a deep breath and the lights go down and we watch these artists in real time, it's church. It's the shared testimony, right? Everybody leaves the theater with the same ability to or a similar experience that they then get to communicate to their own spirits but to everyone else that they come into contact with. Theater edifies the human existence and the human spirit, which is why we've been doing it for centuries. My hope is that they find ways to expand the theater, right? Like, I think, if anything, Hamilton can expand the palette of what is possible and can push creators to create in other mediums as well, but theater is never going away. We have to have it. And we'll get to a place where it's safe to be in the same room together, and as soon as we do, then lights gonna come back on, the actors gonna be ready to get back on stage, and folks are gonna be ready to sit in those seats and enjoy the experience of being a human being around other human beings.
That was beautifully said. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, brother. Hopefully we'll be able to do this in person one day. I love you so much.
In the meantime, you stay safe. Love you right back.
You too. Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
Christopher, I love you so much. I love how we were able to just like kick it and laugh at the beginning of the interview. He was all like, okay, I see where you're going. Yes, boo, I went there. But I'm looking forward to doing this again in person at some point, but really appreciate the fact that you took the time to talk to me and that Disney Plus allowed you to. So that's really cool. Before we get to the interview with Leslie though, y'all, let me just acknowledge this. Now, I know we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's hot. It's summertime. People are getting stir crazy. They want to go to the beach. They want to go lay out in the sun. They want a barbecue. They want to have some family gatherings and all of that. But let me tell you something. I remember a time, sounds so weird to say, I remember a time, but I remember a time when all of that was possible. And I also remember when Jaws came out. Jaws is celebrating its 45th anniversary this year. Can you believe it? It was released on June 20th, 1975. And I remember that Jaws was the first movie that was released. First of all, it was the first big summer blockbuster film to be released. And second of all, it was the first film that really kind of adequately and successfully was able to tie marketing products in with the film, kind of like how E.T. did a little later. But Jaws, like, you couldn't go see Jaws without seeing like the t-shirts everywhere, little replicas of the little crazy the mechanical Jaws thing that they still have at the Universal Studios tour. When you go on that tour, they still have that replica of the shark that comes out to scare you while you're in the little tour shenanigan thing. But the person that designed that shark, his name is Joe Alves, and he has a plethora of interviews that he's done online about how he designed that shark, what went into that. But I'm gonna tell you something, that movie Jaws, it kept people out of the water, out of the beaches for days, the same way that Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho kept people out of the shower. But I would be remiss in letting the month of June go away without paying homage to the 45th anniversary of Jaws. There are some companies that are doing drive-in screenings across the country. I will have that information up on my social media so that you can check out where to see it. But please remember and give a big old thumbs up and hey, hey, hey to the 45th anniversary of Jaws, which starred Roy Scheider and was directed by Steven Spielberg. Another film that's gonna be available to see this week, they already had a screening on June 26th, but they're gonna have their final screening through Fathom Events in tandem with Turner Classic Movies of Blues Brothers. And if you remember anything about classic SNL, you remember that on Saturday Night Live, the Blues Brothers was a really popular skit that they actually turned into a film. And the Blues Brothers were comprised of Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. And it also has a little cameo in there of Aretha Franklin, the late Aretha Franklin. So check that out. If you wanna go see it, you know, have like a little movie night in your house, it's July 29th. You can go to fathomevents.com and buy a ticket to see the Blues Brothers, plural, excuse me. So having said that, let me get into this interview with Leslie Odom Jr. Now, Leslie is somebody that I go way back with. We're friends. And I was actually friends with his wife, Nicolette Robinson, before I met him. And Nicolette was the first African-American woman to play the lead role in the musical Waitress. I don't know what's wrong with my mouth today. Waitress, that was written by Sarah Bareilles, the Grammy Award-winning recording artist and songwriter Sarah Bareilles. But Leslie Odom Jr. went on to win the Tony Award for his role of Aaron Burr in Hamilton. And I just want to tell this quick story about Hamilton because this interview is a little shorter than the one with Christopher, but I wanted to see Hamilton and I was like, y'all, I cannot be paying no $600 for a ticket. I got a mortgage to pay. So I rang up Leslie to see if, like, you know, maybe they had some balcony seats. Like, I wouldn't mind sitting in the last row of the balcony in the last seat or something like that. And Leslie told me that they had some standing room only tickets and that they were a lot more affordable. So I was like, cool. And he told me how that worked. And so I went to New York and I saw Hamilton in New York on Broadway, original cast, standing room only. I did not see Lin-Manuel. My friend Javier was standing in for him that day. Javier Bardem, he was standing in that day. But Javier is thebomb.com. So if you ever, when we ever get through this and you get to go back and see Hamilton and Javier is, if he's still doing the show, if you get a chance to see him, he's amazing. But Leslie Odom Jr. and I, that's our history. And I wanted to just share that with you guys because I don't think I've ever shared that here before we get into this interview. So take a look and a listen to Hamilton's Aaron Burr, Leslie Odom Jr. What was it like for you to step into the room where it was all going down with Hamilton for the first time?
Oh man, I was just trying to keep up. I seen the very first reading of the Hamilton mixtape in Poughkeepsie. Nicolette was working up there, and so I got a chance to sit in a little black box theater at Vassar and watch the first act of this thing. So when I got the email from Lin 3 months later to come in and be part of the, you know, he was doing the first reading of Act 2, I knew
what it was at that point. I'd seen my shot and Satisfied and Wait For It and Dear Theodosia. I mean, give me a break. I just prepared like I'd never prepared for anything before. I wanted to be worthy of the opportunity to be in the room, to be honest. That's it.
You know, as theater folk, we oftentimes laugh and reminisce about all those times where we went up on a lyric or a set piece didn't move the way it was supposed to, or somebody didn't make an entrance the way they were supposed to. Do you have any memories like that from performing the show?
Oh my God, yes. There's a refrain that I have in the show, all throughout the show, that is the same melody, but they all have different lyrics. And as you can imagine, the changes were coming fast and furious at the public. And there was one day where I walked out on stage and I went up. Like, I did not know which one I was supposed to do. And it scared the daylight out of me. And so I put the lyrics, whatever entrance I was making, you know, I taped the lyrics to the wing for whichever version of the refrain I was doing. And so I went over the lyrics every day until we closed. It was too important. To Burr as the narrator, I felt responsible to keep the whole thing moving, to make sure that the audience stayed engaged and invested, felt safe. I couldn't be messed up. Not on my watch.
As a Black man in America today, who's now a dad and a husband, what do you hope the future is going to look like for your daughter?
When my little girl grows up, I want her to be able to take her space, to be honest. And I wanted her to be able to do that safely. I don't want her to have to worry about her life being in danger, her womanhood being in danger, her femininity being in danger, any part of her that is sacred to be in danger. Do our best to stamp out the vestiges of racism and bigotry in this country. We're working to expose and stamp out patriarchy, sexism, and violence against women in our society. I have no shortage of work to do before my little girl grows up, you know, to do my part in making sure those things die the death that they deserve.
We know Hamilton was a big pivotal moment in your career, but what would you say has been the biggest pre and post Hamilton moment for you?
Pre-Hamilton, personally, when I made my Broadway debut in Rent, I didn't plan on being in show business or TV and movies, any of that stuff. I wanted to be in Rent when I was a kid. That's it. And so the fact that I got to do that, I had to work to dream a new dream for myself. Post album of all original music that I put out at the end of last year that I'm so proud of, album called Mister. Or I just shot this movie with Regina King. I played Sam Cooke in Regina's film directorial debut called One Night in Miami. And that, I really felt like I got to, in the same way that Hamilton allowed me to, I got to put a lot of what I've learned as a performer. I get to sing in the movie, I have to act in the movie. You know, it was like acquiring a lot of me. I hope it comes out as good as it felt, but those were high points for me.
Hey, thank you so much, Leslie Odom Jr. I hope you guys enjoyed the show today with those interviews from Leslie Odom Jr. and Christopher Jackson, who again will be in the streaming live event Hamilton on Disney Plus on July 3rd. Now, please be aware that this Hamilton is going to look a little different than the one that was on TV. They did allow a little bit of censoring to happen. So just so that you're aware, that's the situation. But, you know, go to Disney Plus on July 3rd and check it out, you know, when you have some time or when you feel like it, whatever the case may be. Regardless of censoring or not, it's still a very powerful, powerful show. So I highly suggest looking at it, making an event out of it, get some popcorn, get dressed up, you know, do a whole thing. Tweet about it, put it on social media, whatever you want to do. But, you know, got to get creative in these times, honey, because you can't go nowhere. So you definitely got to get creative. So there's that. And thanks again for listening to the reviews that I did of Good Trouble and Rebuilding Paradise. Now, next week, I have an interview from a film called Palm Springs with Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. I didn't interview Andy, but I did interview Kristen. So I have that interview coming up for you. I also have a film review of The Old Guard that I think is coming out on July 3rd as well with Charlize Theron. And I'm going to do some suggestions of some Black films that I feel you need to watch that will better inform you about what we are going through in the world right now in regards to Black Lives Matters. I also want to tell you, Black Lives Matter rather, I also want to tell you about some interviews I have coming up with Russell Crowe. He's in a movie called Unhinged. I interviewed him and his co-star, Karen Pistorius. So I have the two of them. I have those interviews coming up. I have an interview coming up with Tytus Burgess from Central Park and a plethora of other things. Like, his credits are just ridiculous. I showed an interview with him before, but this time we're going to have him in real time and probably for about 20 minutes. I also will be doing an interview with Uzo Aduba from Orange is the New Black. She's also in Mrs. America and a film called Miss Virginia. So we'll be talking to her about that. And those are some people that are up and coming. I'll let you know the dates that they'll be here as usual. And congratulations to all of the winners and the nominees for the BET Awards, which is happening right now. Again, thank you so much, Michael B., Marcus, and Brandon for joining me in the chat room. Michael P. says, I think it's going to be a long time before folks are willing to go back to the theaters and the drive-in. Yeah, it will be the drive-in. I don't have such a big problem with that, but the movies, yeah, it's going to be a minute. It's definitely going to be a minute because, you know, you got to play it safe. And you said, while he's playing Sam Cooke. Yes, Leslie is in a film called One Night in Miami, which is directed by Oscar winner Regina King, and he is playing Sam Cooke in that film. So be on the lookout for that too. I think a trailer for that dropped a couple of weeks ago. That is it for this edition, this episode of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. Again, if this is your first time here, please click the subscribe button below. Give me a big old thumbs up to let me know you were here. I will see you next week. Until then, stay safe, stay sane, wash those hands, give love to those that you know, those that you haven't talked to in a while, reach out to them. Those that you know are by themselves, reach out to them, give them some love. And until the next time, y'all, love, peace, and hair grease. Deuces.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.